Hey everyone, it's Cam Hurt, host of the Best Show Ever podcast, and we have got a second season coming out very soon that I am very excited about. We've got some very cool special guests, including musical acts that we all love, like Karina Reichman, Daniel Donato, Jake Brownstein from Eggy, Rick and Peter from Goose, and many more. Tune in for new episodes dropping on Osiris Media March 5th on the Best Show Ever podcast.
Introducing the TikTok viral lash serum Grande Lash MD from the leaders in lash and brow care, Grande Cosmetics. Backed by 15 years of real clinical results, where 91% saw longer looking lashes. With over 35,000 five-star reviews, this product started a lash serum revolution. With over 10 million sold and over 100 award wins brand-wide, believe the hype. Start your lash transformation today and get 15% off using code LASHES15.
I'm so excited to tell you a bit about today's sponsor, Music Masters Collective. They're a nonprofit organization that produces unique music events, providing opportunities for fans and artists to meet and collaborate in an inspired and creative atmosphere. Every week, Music Masters Collective hosts different events, all with the opportunity to learn from world-class musicians like Bill Frisell, Kurt Rosenwinkel, Julian Lage, Mark Ribot, Wayne Krantz, Oteil Burbridge, the Milk Carton Kids, and so many more. At an event like Alternative Guitar Summit Camp happening this August, you can expect in-depth workshops with guitar masters, once-in-a-lifetime performances, the opportunity to play alongside your favorite musicians, and a lot of fun. You'll leave this event packed full of wisdom and with a whole community of musicians to create with. This all-inclusive week in the Catskills Mountains of upstate New York is guaranteed to be magical. Scholarships are available, but spots are extremely limited, so visit www.alternativeguitarsummitcamp.com/inside to learn more. Greetings, everyone. Welcome back to Inside the Musician's Brain. I'm your host, Chris Pandolfi from the infamous String Dusters. And I just took a few weeks off from the podcast, but I'm back to round out season two with four more new episodes coming out over the next few months and some great stuff teed up that I'm excited about. I'm really excited about the interview I've got for you today with my buddy Oliver Wood from the incredible band The Wood Brothers. Cannot say enough great things about their music or about Oliver's solo stuff. He has a killer new solo record called Always Smilin' that's out now. And the three singles from that record, Face of Reason, Fine Line, and Kindness, have been on repeat over here. Check them out. And we just got into a really great, interesting conversation. Oliver hipped me to the fact that he's been checking out some cool different songwriting techniques and trying to understand how our brains work and how creativity works. Lots of really cool stuff, so stick around for that. Inside the Musician's Brain is brought to you by Osiris Media, curators of all kinds of amazing podcast content. And we're also brought to you by EMG Pickups, makers of all kinds of really high quality instrument pickups, mostly known for their electric guitar stuff, but they also have great pickups for the acoustic instruments. I use the ACB barrel in my banjo, have for years. Really reliable, easy to install, and great company, all made in the USA. And have really enjoyed working with Rob Turner, who owns EMG. We've worked together to kind of fine-tune that banjo pickup, and they're doing a killer job. So check out EMG for all your pickup needs. Okay, so I want to share some intel with everyone today, some really interesting stuff that I've been researching and learning about. This ties into this really awesome, heady conversation I had with Oliver. I was really inspired by that. And we were talking about meditation and songwriting and how the brain works, and this certainly ties into that. Recently, I'd say in the last few months, the idea of breathing and breath work and our breath has really been crossing my radar over and over. And so I've checked it out, and I've really started to learn some interesting things and put some of it into practice as well. I'm definitely not any kind of expert, but I want to share some of this because it's really interesting, and I think it could be really helpful. You know, it's crazy. We breathe all day long, But for me, it's not really something that I've thought too much about or been intentional about, the way that I breathe or how changing that could potentially affect me. And, you know, Andy Hall, of course, our String Dusters Dobro player, who is great to talk to about anything like this. Andy has researched and I think also practiced a lot of these things, and he hipped me to this idea that breath work, especially the last few months of my life, have been pretty chaotic. And of course, the last year has been chaotic. And Andy was showing me how simple breathing exercises can really help reduce stress and you know, bring you back to center. And even bigger than that, I've noticed in my case that when I play music, oftentimes my breathing is compromised. It's shallow and kind of erratic, and it makes it hard to flow and really hard to emote and be one with your instrument. And that inspired me as well to learn more about this and try to understand what's going on and undertake some kind of meaningful practice to improve breath patterns and in turn improve my flow. Of course, the goal of all this is just to be more relaxed and more present, which is a challenge in music, but it's also a challenge in life. So this is definitely a big picture thing. So Andy had mentioned it as it relates to kind of life in general, and I was already starting to feel it for myself as it relates to music and performance. And then I just started hearing it. It's just kind of started popping up all around, like the universe, like nudging me in that direction to see what's there. It came up multiple times at this really cool event called Banjo Summit that I was a part of a few weeks ago. Great virtual event with all these incredible teachers, musicians who I really look up to. And we were doing workshops and performances online. And twice, Ben Krakauer, good buddy of mine, killer player, and the one and only Bela Fleck, both mentioned the importance of breathing and the connection between a relaxed, focused state and deep, full breaths. And Ben was talking about how when he wants to try and be more relaxed when he plays, that'll be the thing that he puts his attention on, making sure that his breaths are full. Because, you know, there's only so many things we can focus on when we're trying to do something at a high level, only so many mantras we can keep in the front of our brain. And that might be a great one to check out for musicians or, like I said, for anyone doing, honestly, anything. And those mantras change through our life, the things that we're focusing on and trying to improve at. But at some point, I think looking at your breath can really potentially make a huge difference. And so I heard about it at Banjo Summit, was kind of inspired to dig deeper, started checking out some TED Talks. And of course, there are some incredible ones related to breathing and breath work. Check out Breathe to Heal by Max Strom, really dug that one. And he looks at how breathing exercises can lower blood pressure, reduce stress, and basically kind of immediately alter our physical state or trick our body into feeling more calm, more focused. And he does the 4-7-8 breathing exercise, which is a cool place to start. Really simple. We just breathe in for 4, hold that for 7, and then breathe out for 8. So let's do it. Let's do a couple reps right here. So we're going to go in for 4, inhale, 2, 3, and now hold, 2, and now exhale, 2, 3, now inhale, 2, hold, and now out, 8. And there we go. 2 reps of a very simple breathing exercise. How did that make you feel? Check it out. And there's all sorts of variations on that, and it can really alter your state almost immediately. It's really cool. It's really crazy. Also, checking out this book, Breathe, by James Nestor, which I've been seeing around. And the main takeaway from that, he talks all about the history and anatomy and why we've evolved away from breathing through our nose and gravitated toward breathing through our mouth, which is a lot less healthy for you. So you take a deep breath through your nose, that air is filtered and also warmed up as it enters your body, so much better for you. And he also talks about taking deeper breaths and breathing more slowly and rhythmically and how good that is for your body. So those are some of the biggest takeaways from the book Breathe. The science of all this stuff is just overwhelming. Like, you learn about the science and then you just have to try it. And I think a simple layman's terms scientific explanation to me, I understood it as, you know, we're in a certain situation, we breathe a certain way. So if we're stressed, scared, anxious, we breathe a certain way. Or if we're relaxed, we breathe a certain way. And that breathing elicits the production of certain chemicals in our body, cortisol. It changes the composition of your body. So we are just mimicking those breathing patterns to elicit that physical response. There are actually, you know, we are actually changing the composition of our bodies by doing this. So that's the scientific end, pretty undeniable. But it's when you put it into practice yourself that you see what it can do for you. So in my case, I've been trying to do a couple things. One is practice banjo really slowly and just focus on taking those good deep breaths. And it's hard. It's tricky to stay concentrated on that, but I've been working on that. Like anything, it only gets better with practice. And I've also been trying to do that 4-7-8 exercise, or even a more basic rhythmic, just in for four, out for four, through the nose, and do these, you know, momentary exercises that can just make you feel better, help you focus, help with clarity. They can help you with sleep potentially. There's another huge TED Talk on breathing that talks about recovering from PTSD. So there's all kinds of just amazing things that can be achieved and changed about ourselves by adding a little intention and thought to an activity that I didn't give a lot of attention and thought to. And a real quick shout out to my man, Ben Kaufman, bass player for the amazing Yonder Mountain String Band. If you've ever noticed, Ben has the word breathe tattooed on his forearm. And that was another piece that inspired me to learn more, and had a really interesting convo with Ben, who corroborated a lot of this stuff and something that he's focused on as well. And indeed, that word is there for a very good reason. It is a simple reminder of the amazing power of breathing. So check that out. See what you can find out. There's a lot in there. And I think it's just one of those overarching health themes that if you could stand to build a little awareness into your daily life around your breathing, it could make a huge difference, but it doesn't really change much for you. You know, you don't have to undertake some huge new practice or change your patterns drastically. It's just a little bit of awareness. So let's jump ahead now to my conversation with the amazing Oliver Wood. His new record, Always Smiling, is out everywhere now. This guy is a total badass. Here we go.
Well, I know a man, and he's always smiling. I know a man, and he's always smiling. It looks so easy, he could be flying. I know a man, and he's always smiling. I said, how do you do it? You must lean into it.
All right, we're here on Inside the Musician's Brain, and so excited about my guest today. He is one third of one of my favorite bands out there, and just a great guy, great musician with a killer new record out, Oliver Wood. Welcome to the podcast, man.
Thanks for having me, Chris. Happy to be here.
So talk to me, brother. How you been? It's been a crazy year, to say the least. Have you been keeping busy? How are you doing?
I'm doing fine, actually. It has been a crazy year. I'm just thinking about it. It's beyond a year now, but
it is.
But yeah, this last year was crazy for me, like anyone else. I went through the same weirdness, weird vibes, ups and downs, and for the most part, I got a lot of positives out of it, and I was creative and productive, and didn't make much money, but like anyone else. But at the same time, I made stuff, which and sound and words and stuff, and that was fun. And I got to spend a lot more time with my family than I normally would. During
that's awesome.
Touring,
if I had to, if I had to choose between making money and making stuff, it would be stuff 10 times out of 10. So
no brainer.
So interesting, because you put out a record, or you have a record coming out that's called Always Smiling, which is a rare sort of moment of positivity in what I think many people have seen as a very challenging time. But this record obviously came together here in the recent past, and it does have a really positive theme, which isn't necessarily the norm right now.
Yeah, well, for the most part, and I bet I'm not the only one who tried to keep things up, and sometimes I think some of the songs that I've used for healing throughout my life have had a positive bent to them, but sometimes they can be angry. You know, there's a couple things on the record that are a little more angry, or at least acknowledging how messed up things are, and that's all right too. That's a cool thing about making music and art in general, is that you can work some things out with it.
And is that what you just said? A really interesting thing right there, which is using music for healing. And you're referring to your own songs and getting things out that are inside of you.
Yeah, absolutely. And for that matter, consuming music myself and listening to music. And you know, I say this all the time to remind myself that, as touring musicians, you know, we sacrifice a lot. Like, we're gone a lot. We're gone from our families and our loved ones. And as I get older, I'm like, I have those times out there. I'm like, what the heck am I doing out here? I could be home with I got a 12-year-old right now who, you know, I don't want to miss stuff, you know?
I get it.
But the ultimate thing that always brings me back to it's just when people come up and say, hey, your music heals me. You know, it got me through a tough time or just made me happy when I was really depressed or whatever. And then you just realize, oh, yeah, this is important work. And it's that healing and connectivity that comes from it that we do take for granted when we're all burnt out as players, you know, and we're busting our buns and sort of forgetting about, oh God, we got a real life at home or another life, you know?
Yeah, man, your music has done that for me. I'm not going to lie.
Thank you.
I really have listened to the Wood Brothers probably as much as any band in recent years. And
wow, thank you.
Yeah, man, you guys really have a special thing and a sound, I think, that resonates. And the Muse, I just listened to like crazy. Mm. And you guys really have such an expressive sound, and I think that's not only in the vibe of the music and the way that you guys play, but also the songs and the lyrics, man. It really is, it is something that I think you nailed it. You know, you can identify with all manner of messages, from positive to things that are hardships for us. There's just a lot in there to relate to, and a presentation artistically that's really cool and really beautiful at times, and that edgy and dirty. It's just great, man. And your new record has got, you know, is a very, I mean, it's very much got its own thing, and I love the uniqueness, but it carries a lot of those same qualities to me.
Sure. Same strand. Absolutely.
Yeah. So let's talk about this new record. How long has this been coming together for?
Well, honestly, before the pandemic, kind of the whole entire year before the pandemic, I started getting excited about just collaborating with some people outside of the Wood Brothers, just for fun, you know, just to connect with my fellow musicians who some new people that I met, like Phil Cook, was a guy that worked on a couple of the songs with me when he was in town. Carsey Blanton, one of my co-writers, Chris Long. These are people who, you know, I would catch them when they're in town and we would write songs. And something I should mention is that we're, with the Wood Brothers, we are blessed to now have, we've had it for the last 3 years, a really cool studio space.
Oh, cool.
So that means that no matter what we're working on, we have a place to do it and a place to actually record it if we want to.
Man, what a great outlet for
huge.
Every part of the process, writing, demos, tracking.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's huge.
Yeah. So, so when people came in town, I would take them to the studio and we would either write a song or write and record a song or just record. So anyway, that year before the pandemic, we had finished our Wood Brothers album called Kingdom in My Mind, and when I had a little lull. And so when people came into town, I would start recording. And it was just collaborating for the sake of doing it and for the sake of doing stuff that I wouldn't be able to do with the Wood Brothers. And in that year, I recorded maybe three or four things, basic tracks, maybe wrote a few tunes. It wasn't until the pandemic hit that I started getting back to that stuff because there was nothing else going on. I wasn't touring. And so I finished a few of those things and even put out a single and a B-side with that I worked on with Phil Cook called Soul of This Town. And the B-side was Battle Is Over. And those are songs that ended up on the album. But at that point, I still didn't have an album in mind. I was just like, oh, let's put out a single. And then after a while, I started writing some more. And before I knew it, I had enough for an album. And so I was like, why not? There's still nothing else going on. I might as well set a goal for myself and have, keep myself creative and busy. So it was not until halfway into the pandemic that I decided I was making an album.
Well, it's a killer record, man. And I have to say, I was proud of myself because I think my three favorite jams on there, Fine Line, Face of Reason, and Kindness, those are the three singles. Those are the first three singles, right?
You called them.
So, I swear to God, I didn't even look. I had all the raw tracks and I was spinning them. And,
nice.
And I love all the songs, but there's some really cool thematic stuff on here. And I was just curious to know, like, Kindness, is that about someone specific?
The phrase kindness is my religion is, I'm pretty sure the Dalai Lama said that.
Okay, great.
That's a quote from the Dalai Lama. And so, of course, that's an inspiration. But more specifically, I think, when over this last year when we were going through not only pandemic, but a lot of social upheaval and divisiveness and stuff, there were certain people that, to me, in my life, that really helped me stay positive. So that song is not about me. It's about what I aspire to be, which is often the case. But, we all know people like that that are kind of just seem, and I'm sure sometimes they're dark on the inside like any of us, but sometimes there's people who just seem to always be up or always make something good out of a bad thing. And so I was thinking about those people that I know.
I get it. There's so much inspiration there when you encounter someone. And that's something I try to tell myself periodically if things are hard, to remember the perspective of, sometimes you come across like a homeless person and they just seem so light, and they all face things on. We all have things that we're working through on the inside. However, there's a real value in that which we project out to the world.
Yes.
And sharing that kind of energy. So that's cool. That's kind of what I've figured. It's sort of a catch-all for people in your life who help to push you in, because you need that inspiration around you.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And it comes back around to me every time with the idea of being connected with not only with others, but with yourself. And I think that's, that's one thing that, like, as touring musicians, for instance, we may have taken for granted, but we're used to being on stage in a theater or whatever with lots of other people. And there's the moment during a concert, or there's pretty much the whole concert, where everybody puts aside their politics, whatever might be divisive, you know, and everybody's on the same wavelength. And it's way bigger than just people admiring an artist. You know what I mean? It's like the artist and the crowd become one awesome love fest.
Absolutely.
And so, you know, that was taken away from us. And I don't know if you've been back out to do any, I'm sure you guys have been back to do a couple gigs here and there for sure. And
we
it's
have.
Like, it's like, wow, does that feel good? You know, that's, I've sure missed that part, especially, you know? But I find like, that's the kind of, you know, those kindness kind of quote, always smiling people are the ones sometimes that help us stay connected. It's been pointed out to me, you know, that my album's called Always Smiling, but all my promo shots are like, you know, not smiling because I hate photo shoots. just more reminder for me is like, oh yeah, you know, I actually put a photo of myself on the back of the album cover that is actually me smiling because it's like at a live show, like we were just playing a show, and so a candid shot. It's cool. Like, now that's me naturally, but like on a photo shoot, I look like a jerk. Anyway, that was a digression there.
Well, and I noticed, I was really psyched to notice when I looked at the credits, I think both on Fine Line and Face of Reason, you've got Nick Falk on drums, percussion, and Eric Robertson and Aaron Lipp, who used to play together. And it was really, so I've played with Nick a bunch. I mean, I know all those guys. I've played with Nick and Eric, but I've played with Nick a bunch. And I was just curious, how are you connected with those guys?
So the three guys that you mentioned who are actually on Fine Line and Kindness, those two songs.
Oh, that's right. My bad.
No worries. So those guys, I remember they had a band called the Boston Boys a long time ago.
Yes,
that's and I think
right.
they're all weren't they all? I don't know about Aaron, but the rest of those guys were Berkeley. They met. They were college kids together, anyway.
That's
and
right.
At one point, they did a couple shows with the Wood Brothers, and they already knew a bunch of our songs and stuff, and they were amazing musicians and just really nice guys.
Somebody tell me what's the reason nobody is satisfied. Jump around from one to another. Don't they know it gets cold outside? It's a fine line between love and lust, between truth and trust. Yeah, dreams and dust. Yeah, it's a fine line between a hope and a prayer. Someplace and nowhere. Yeah, well, it's a fine line.
So I stayed in touch with them. They eventually asked if I wanted to produce a record for them. And they eventually turned into the Riggs,
think,
and the Rondo Riggs eventually even, due to legal threats or something. So anyway, I produced a record for them, and, which was so fun and so great, and became tight with them. And sadly, they broke up like a year later, and they all do different stuff, but they're super talented guys.
Great fit for your stuff.
Oh, so good. And you know, they're all 20 years younger than me, so probably more than that, but we don't have to. Yeah.
So what's your plan as far as touring this record? I know probably a lot of these songs will integrate really well with the Wood Brothers, but do you have plans to do anything on the road that focuses on this stuff?
Yeah, I've already done a little tour, and I've got another tour in July with this group, which is really just me and John O'Ricks from the Wood Brothers and Ted Pecchio, who played bass on the whole album.
Mm-hmm.
But it's tough. I mean, we have a pretty full Wood Brothers schedule starting in August. We have a tour in June and then in August, and then for the rest of the year, it's sort of the 2 weeks on, 2 weeks off. So it'll be tricky for me to really tour like one would normally tour on an album, but that's okay. I didn't do it to, I just did it to do it, you know? So that was we'll see what happens.
Well, I'm glad you did.
It's nice to put the music out in the world.
I'm glad you did. Yeah, no, yeah. I'm digging it. I had a solo dance party last night. I'm not going to lie to you. There's not a lot of jams that can get me going that way. But nice. So, man, let's talk about songwriting, because you're such a gifted songwriter, and you know it's been amazing to see the Wood Brothers emerge as such a force, and what a great outlet for your stuff. Take us inside your process. You know, is songwriting something that is always going on for you? Do you work on it in more concentrated chunks? How does that look?
Yeah, it's kind of always going on, but there are definitely times when I really concentrate on it. And I always notice when finishing a project that I sort of have a lull and I just take a creative break. But I try to I keep notebooks around, and like all of us, I have millions of voice memos, a little on my phone, a little ideas, and whether musical or lyrical or both. So that's always happening. And then, you know, that was one thing that helped me get creatively focused, was when I decided I was making an album and created a structure a little bit, like, okay, I'm going to try to be done by this date. And I was a little more disciplined about just showing up every day.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, my process can be everything from, you know, writing music and lyrics together, coming up with musical ideas and saving them, and then writing on them later, trying to marry, you know, things out of my notebook with things that I've recorded musically and see if they'll go together at random.
Yeah.
So a little bit of everything. And I'm a real nerd these days about the songwriting process and just the way the brain works creatively in general. So I've read a lot of, biographies, autobiographies of iconic songwriters and less iconic ones. And
cool. What are you learning?
Well, I'm just fascinated. You know, I've always been fascinated when people always talk about inspiration or the muse or whatever you want to call it, that sort of intangible and that thing that you really don't have control over.
Sure.
And it just, sometimes you get inspired and other times you don't. And as a writer or as any creative person, you obviously have those inspired times where that side of your brain is just playing and having fun and putting stuff out there.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have that sort of logical side of your brain that organizes things and that wants control and that actually is judgmental and sort of helps in the end for you to get organized, maybe to arrange a song or whatever. But during the creative process, it tends to get in the way and it can really mess things up.
So does that mean that you try to have almost like a free period where you're not worried about the more disciplined side of things and you're just sort of letting the ideas free associate and flow?
Yes. And this is a new, I'm consciously doing that more. I'm making an effort to say, you know what? It doesn't, there's nothing at stake here. Just go, just do stuff and try to get to that playful place where you just create stuff. And, you know, we discovered something with the Wood Brothers a couple of years ago that I really stuck with this idea and thought about it a lot. Where when we got our new studio, we were just getting set up, and the engineer, we just wanted to see what it sounded like, right? So we all set up in this big room, and there was one mic put on the drums, and you know, I think there was a guitar, electric guitar, and a electric bass. So mics on those things, and then a room mic, but very minimal. But we recorded it to tape, like it was a hi-fi recording, if you will, for just a jam session. So all we were trying to do is see how the room sounded. So we spent a good part of the day just improvising, and not, we weren't playing songs. We weren't in making an album mode, even a song mode. We were just like listening, you know, how it is. I mean, you play in a band that's full of improvisers, right? You're used to that thing where let's just listen to each other and have a musical conversation, right?
For sure.
And, you know, that is when your brain is in play mode, is in inspiration mode. When you're just reacting, you're not following any form, any structure. It's just like playing, right?
Yeah.
And so anyway, we went back and listened to that stuff. And we were like, that's what's got to be on the album, because we're never going to capture that again. You know, you could take something that you jammed on and then relearn it and then record it. But at that point, you're going to be using your logical brain because you're going to be playing a part. Oh, yeah, we did this and this is how it worked. It's just like when you're trying to play a song, you're in a different frame, in a different frame of mind. You're playing parts.
Yeah.
And you're thinking logic and structure. So we started doing, we did several days worth of improvisations like that. And then we wrote songs on top of those and actually cut them up and used them.
So you actually used those tracks as
on the album. On the album.
So
for my new record, same thing. You know, you were talking about Nick Falk and Rick Robertson and Aaron.
He told me to ask you about the extended jam.
So we for kindness, that was not kindness yet. All it was us sitting in a circle and playing and just listening. And I just started jamming and C. I think I had a 12 string guitar tuned down to C. And I just started riffing on it and it sounded really weird. And everybody just joins in.
No progression, no nothing.
Nothing.
All just comes on the fly. Okay.
Just a groove with Nick Falk playing a chicken coop.
I saw that in the liner notes.
But then every once in a while, I would just say E flat, and everybody goes to E flat, and then back to C. You know, and then at one time it was like F. You know, just calling out somewhat random. You know, no song in mind. The idea was, I've done this before, and I know that we can just have fun, and we'll try a few different keys in case someday I want to make a progression out of it. You know?
So then, ultimately, do you take that stuff and edit it?
Yeah.
So you'll be like, all right, hey, this chunk here is a verse, and then this
exactly.
could work as okay. So then you go through and you sort of build a song form out of the
yeah.
pieces.
So you can build a song form, and sometimes there's not a lot of building to do. Like some of the transitions between
sure.
keys were totally great as they were. Some of them needed a little bit of like a little more editing than others. But the point is, what I love about it is that, you know, when you're not playing a song, you might step on a guitar solo, or you might get in each other's way, or there might be a drum fill in a weird place. But sometimes it's not completely logical, but it just feels good because you're having fun.
Sure.
So even the mistakes, even the clashes in tonality or whatever can be really pleasant. There's happy accidents all over the place. And you would never
so
get
cool.
that otherwise. So
that's so cool. I'm inspired
so that song,
now. I'm gonna go try that.
It's so fun. It's
yeah.
so fun to compose like that. So anyway, that song Kindness, for instance, was from that session with those guys. And then it was really like a year later during the pandemic that I wrote on top of it, and I started cutting it up, and then I just had John O'Riggs play a drum track to kind of glue it together.
Okay. So you have these chunks. Take us through the process of you have this recording, and then you want to dig into it and see if there's a song there. Are you actually like sitting at a recording console, moving chunks around, or are you just kind of looping things and playing along with them? How does that work?
I don't think it's a little bit of everything, but for the most part, it's just like, here's the groove, I really like it, and I've got it in my head, and I start writing.
Okay.
And then, you know, gradually you go back and listen, what happens here? Ooh, it's going up to E flat. That's going to be my chorus, you know?
Cool.
And then the one time that it goes to F, that's going to be the bridge or the solo or whatever. So it's there's no one method. It's just kind of sitting with it and feeling it out.
And is that the part where you move in? Do you consider that kind of the part where you move into more of the organizational mode? Okay.
Yeah, exactly. And so, you know, for instance, at the end of that day that we jammed, we had the extended jam. Well, that then I taught them a song that I knew already, which was Fine Line. And so the same group that had just spent all day jamming with no form at all suddenly had to learn a song where we played it a few times, sang it. I sang it live. We just played it. It was done. So it was kind of cool to combine those two processes on the same day.
Yeah.
And one of them left me with all this raw material, and the other one was a finished song, you know?
Stick around. We will be right back after this very short break.
Take your lumps each day. They're handed out.
Introducing the TikTok Viral Lash Serum Grande Lash MD from the leaders in lash and brow care, Grande Cosmetics. Backed by 15 years of real clinical results, where 91% saw longer-looking lashes. With over 35,000 five-star reviews, this product started a lash serum revolution. With over 10 million sold and over 100 award wins brand-wide, believe the hype. Start your lash transformation today and get 15% off using code LASHES15.
What is a city without its music?
The legacy of the New York Philharmonic
is incredible. Nearly two centuries of history. That's a lot of music and a lot of stories.
I was sitting on stage for the very first time thinking, I can't quite believe this is happening.
Join me, Jamie Bernstein, as we explore the history of the New York Philharmonic. It's the NY Phil story made in New York, a podcast about a city, its people, and their orchestra. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
Hey, what's up? This is Blake Weiland. I'm the host of the Tone Mob Podcast. It's a show where I interview guitar people about guitar stuff. We talk about their pedals, their amps, their accessories, their preferences, all that stuff, as well as a healthy dose of whatever comes up. Topics have ranged from aliens to addiction and anywhere in between. Oh yeah, and pizza. We're definitely going to be talking about pizza. So get the show wherever you're listening to this podcast at. Just search The Tone Mob in your search bar and it will pop right up. Come join us. We're having a lot of fun. Thanks for checking it out.
But I'll tell you what, I'm going to charge forward here because I feel like what I've gotten interested in since like when you're sitting by yourself and you're writing something, what, and it doesn't matter if it's lyrics or music, but you know, how do you put yourself into that? Can you purposely put yourself into that frame of mind of inspiration and not logic? You know what I mean? It's like it feels like you can't control. But well, what I've learned, there are methods. You know what I've learned from reading and from my own experience, and then it being sort of confirmed by Paul Simon does that. Oh, Tom Waits does that. You know.
What are some of these methods?
I mean, really simple stuff. And I think people stumble on this. Like, you ever notice that while you're driving, you're like, a lot of times I get so many ideas if I'm on a drive, like if I'm just have a long drive, stuff starts coming to me. Or walking, if I'm just on a walk, I might have my headphones on, or I might just be walking through the park or down the street. So as it turns out, I think what happens is your logical mind, which I'm trying to distract and get out of the way, has to focus on whatever little menial thing you're doing. So in order to drive, it takes a certain amount of concentration.
For sure.
Same thing. Just walking down the street, you at least have to balance and stay in a straight line, right? So, like when I'm writing something and I'm stuck, sometimes I'll go on a drive or I'll go on a walk. I read about Paul Simon, his whole thing was when he was working on a lyric, he'll take a baseball and a glove and he just throws a baseball against the wall and catches it, you know. But some kind of, it could be just anything like that, you know.
That's like the raw inception phase when you want something to just come up from the depths. The goal is to kind of occupy your mind so it's got a simple task to do and then to sort of see what springs up. That's like the inception phase.
Yeah, the inception phase, or, you know, sometimes that's a phase that comes naturally, like just because you're in a cool frame of mind. But then what if you're in the middle of the writing? Okay, now you're at the hard part. So this is more like when I get stuck, like, okay, I wrote a great chorus, but like, what happens now? I'm forcing it. I keep forcing it. I keep thinking I know what I'm doing and it's not happening. So that's when I'll like go on a walk or try something to get out of my box. And here's other things, you know, get a really crappy instrument or an instrument that you're not used to or a new tuning or something like that, where you just, you know, when you're playing your old trusty thing that you always know how it's going to sound, you just do all the same shit. You do all the same stuff.
For sure.
And you get in a rut, right? But then if somebody hands you their vintage something cool and it just has a mojo to it, or you get like a child's instrument, you know, like a something crappy, it could be something exotic, whatever, but it's not what you're used to.
You almost have to like distract yourself.
Exactly. Exactly what it, and get your get excited and inspired by something because it's new or it's uncomfortable, or you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Or it's just exciting.
You know? I love that. And that really resonates because I know, you know, when I'm doing, and you know, most of the writing that I do is instrumental. And of course the String Dusters, we collaborate on a lot of writing, but whenever I'm doing, you know, sort of workshops for more like banjo oriented, I always tell people when it comes to writing music, you know, a lot of times that first thing that's so exciting, that hook or that's like the easy part.
Yeah.
Finishing things, which includes this step of the process that you're talking about, where you still need that some measure of inspiration, but you also need to push it down the road where you need verses, you need things to change it up, you need a bridge, whatever. And I love that. That's like, it's a really cool methodology.
I really like that there, you can't force something, but you can try things to put yourself in a different frame of mind. You could chug a bunch of bourbon. That could help. That helps me sometimes. but seriously, the other thing that's related to this is that I've read come to understand, like, I think another insight from Paul Simon or Jeff Tweedy has a great book about songwriting now. I don't think this has to apply to songwriting or lyrics. This applies to anything creative or even anything that's like problem solving. Maybe you're an inventor or a mathematician or a scientist, and you're trying to think outside the box. You know, that's how new things happen. But what the other kind of thing that I'm trying to get used to is, it sounds a little bit woo-woo, but like you want to try to follow, don't try to lead the song. In other words, when you're trying to create something, don't feel like you're in control and you know what's going to happen. You need to more have a sense of wonder and discovery. So you have to follow it.
I love it.
So you have to put yourself in a frame of mind that you can get somewhere else and discover something new about it or follow the inspiration. It's not like you can push it. And so sometimes for me, the minute I think, oh, I know what the song's going to be about, and I just try to force it through, and then I'm to paint myself in a corner somehow, or I feel like, oh, I just ruined it, you know, or I got stuck. So it's important to keep that sort of humble approach, like you have something to follow and learn and discover, rather than I'm a genius, I'm gonna make this happen. You have to relinquish control, you know?
You have to listen.
You listen, exactly. Right.
You have to listen, and that really applies for being. That's the same exact. You know, when you're on stage and you feel like you're in a rut, you're playing the same thing. You know, whether you're a soloist, performer, any strand of art, I think the more you try to tune in to what's around you, then you really start to find things. So how does that part Absolutely. Of the process look for you? I mean, you know, when you obviously ultimately you need to get to writing a song. Do you write like on guitar? Do you ever, you know, play other instruments? Like how does that part go?
It's mostly guitar, but I really do find like switching it up, and I have a lot of I have a handful of like weird I really like old instruments, but I have a handful of like weird ones, like little parlor guitars, and like
cool,
this actually belongs to a friend of mine, but this is like an old 30s cowboy,
love it,
you know, something you would have bought at Sears or something. But somehow if I get a vibe from an instrument, it doesn't have to be a good instrument, it just has to be have something that catches my ear. So anyway, point is, I like to switch things up or try a guitar that's tuned really low, or I have a guitar now that has a rubber bridge acoustic guitar so that it doesn't sustain at all. Or I've started using a slide that's made of wood because, cool. And same idea, no sustain.
Yeah.
You know, it still has that untempered thing that you get with slide, right? It's like,
yeah,
there's no frets anymore, but instead of like it's singing like you normally go for sustain.
Yeah.
In this case, it just ruins the note, just, and it just dies. But, you know, things like that, when you have a new sound or a new challenge involved, oftentimes that's the very thing that the most important thing it does is it puts you in that inspired frame of mind instead of the logical organizational frame of mind. So you know, it's easy to, I think, like you were saying, the easy part is that original inspiration, but the hard part is keeping that inspiration.
Yeah, and finishing things.
And finishing things. And obviously you need the logical part of your brain to really do it. But I always find I think the ultimate is kind of going back and forth. You work with inspiration for a while and then logic, but don't get stuck in logic. Go back and forth, you know?
Now, do you feel like the logical part is just pretty readily accessible? You know, we're talking about cool techniques to kind of activate the more inspiration element of this. But do you feel like the logical part is easier to access?
I do, because the logical part is basically based in your experience and your knowledge. Like, okay, I know this probably needs a bridge, or, you know, you've heard a million songs, you have all these methods, and I really think that's what the logical brain is. But the creative brain is like, ooh, you know what, you're right, that is a method, but what if we did the opposite, and just, or what if we try something we haven't tried before.
Ooh, yeah.
Wouldn't that be cool?
How much success? So you've been checking into this stuff here recently and reading and sort of learning. And how do you feel like it's upped your game?
I won't say that it's made me. Well, it makes it more fun. It makes it more fun to just get excited about it. I have a song on my album, it's called Came From Nothing, which is another song that's completely was a jam that was real easy to edit into a song. And that song is about this exact thing. Like, it came from nothing, then it was made. And it's not like a stroke of genius. It's totally just like I was open to it and it happened. You know what I mean? So that's way more fun if you can be humble about it and not feel like you want to just do it and get all the credit for making something awesome, you know?
I know. Isn't that a tricky, weird part of this whole process and discussion is, you know, you're working toward tapping into that thing, but then once you get there, you can't get too hung up on, oh, I'm here now, you know, because it's all a journey. But
yeah.
I think I love what you're saying about listening and receiving, and it's sort of runs counter a little bit to the kind of ego element. And maybe that's more on the organized side. This is who we are. This is what we do. This is the known quantity versus what's out there.
Totally. And you said it, said something cool a little while ago. I will connect to another thing that I got in the habit of meditating religiously every morning during the pandemic, and learning more about that and learning more about myself and how my brain seems to work, and probably most people's brains. But
cool.
But that carries into all this to me. And like you said, sometimes when you're on stage and you just feel it doesn't feel good, or you don't feel right, sometimes the best thing you can do is just pay attention to what's around you.
Yeah.
Like, what's that guy playing? I'm just going to groove on that for a minute. Or, you know, what's the fiddle player playing right now, or whatever. But that's kind of what meditation is all about. It's just like focusing on something in your body, or a noise, a sound or something. In fact, that's a really common technique for mindfulness meditation. It's just like there's like a maybe an AC or a ceiling fan clinking around, and you just focus on that. And
so can you tell us a little bit more about your meditation practice? Was that a newer thing during this last...
It's something I've always done off and on, but never with much routine. So this is the first time I got into, you know, at least 10 or 15 minutes every morning.
Okay.
I just find it's a good way to sort of reboot and the things that I've learned in it, just about trying how to be present, you know, totally applies to songwriting and everything. It applies to, like, you know, being with people and relating to people.
Yeah. It's so interesting. What you said, there is something about your songwriting tip, and, you know, I've had meditation practice off and on, but, to me, sometimes when it's hard to sit and meditate, walking meditation can oftentimes be easier for a very similar reason, just because you have this simple baseline level of you're occupied, and somehow that allows you to quiet your mind a little bit and even just slip a little bit into that phase of just being quiet.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I think, like, sitting meditation is just like that, except it's more challenging is all. So it's like swinging two bats, you know what I mean? It's just a little bit extra, like, okay, but can you do it? Can you sit still and do that? But I think a walking, whether you even call it meditation, is a great, just walking, you know, just going on a hike. Think about what it takes to focus on, like, going up a trail or whatever. It's perfect. It just zones you in on little details.
Yeah, and it also takes a little bit of the, you know, meditation doesn't have to be this very focused. I mean, it can be a more casual thing that you dip in and out of. It can be very, very focused, but
you're right.
I think viewing it as something a little bit more accessible has been helpful for me.
Me too, absolutely.
Do you tie that in any, like, specific way to your songwriting process or your music, your art?
I suppose I do. I think a lot of it is subconscious, but even things like, you know, some of what I've learned about meditation is just to focus on details and things that you might not normally focus on. For instance, just like if you're eating, like, instead of multitasking and looking at your phone and eating and having a conversation, you know, just eating and just being really aware of what it looks like, what it tastes like, you know. And sometimes that's what makes a good, that kind of detail and attention to it is meditative, but it's also something that makes you present. You have to be present just to get that. But like when you're creating something, same kind of thing, like as a songwriter, like describing something, you know, like a good song oftentimes has images, and you really get inside, like, what's happening in this song? What does it look like? What does it feel like? What color is it? What does it smell like? What is it like to be there? And just focusing on that and lyrically anyway, just writing things down, or it could be a soundscape, like a real soundtrack kind of thing. But you have to have that certain kind of attention to detail. And that automatically puts you in the present, you know, it just puts you in, and whether you're being meditating or you're being creative, I think that's the ultimate state for yeah. that, you know.
I'm inspired, man.
Yeah, me too. I love talking about this stuff.
This is really cool. Well, it's, you know, a theme that does come up a lot when I'm talking to musicians is, you know, the long arcing progression of being an artist. You need things to reboot and to refresh, and you need yes. new techniques. And you know, right now, I love this idea of going into the studio and capturing raw things that, you know, you don't have to look at that like, oh, this is a demo or this is a rehearsal, yeah. you know. And that's the process now. And, you know, it may be something totally different a few years from now, you know.
Absolutely. But that, absolutely.
That
could be a phase. Yeah.
yeah, exactly. But just that goal of striving to, you know, look at it as a practice, and we have to find things, these awesome techniques to kind of, you know, connect with yourself, see what's in there, be free, listen, and be inspired. You know, you're always having Absolutely. To evolve that element of being an artist.
Yes. Absolutely.
So what's coming up for you, man? What are plans like for the next, the upcoming year?
I'm getting ready for the first Wood Brothers tour in June. So we have Wood Brothers tours starting in June. And I've got a solo tour in July, but then after that, it's a lot of Wood Brothers tours. And I guess we're, I don't know about you guys, but we have a pretty, like, all indoor fall. And I mean, for the most part, a lot of theater shows and stuff like that that I assume are going to happen.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I know it's still a little bit of a, it's not exactly clear where things are headed, but I will say it's looking a lot better now than it has
yeah.
in a very
yeah.
long time. And I think everyone's just excited to get back out there and start playing and taking advantage yeah. of this warm weather that'll help yeah. sort of kick that in. But yeah, yeah. we've got a similar thing. We got shows coming
yeah.
up.
I'm sure we'll cross paths. We always do.
I can't wait, man. Thank you so yeah. much for joining me today. This has been incredibly interesting and inspiring.
My pleasure, man.
I'm going to go
my
fire
pleasure.
Up my recording rig and just see what happens. I love
go
the
for
sound
it.
Of that. But congrats on the new record, Oliver. Really,
thank you so much, Chris.
Really awesome. And there's a few singles that are already out, and I'm sure we'll be hearing more from you in the future, and I can't wait till our paths cross again, brother.
Likewise, man. Please tell your boys I said hello to.
I will, man. Thanks so much for joining me.
All right. Take care.
How cool was that? So much great advice and intel in that conversation with Oliver Wood. Huge thanks to Oliver for joining me today. Go check out his new record, Always Smiling. Thanks also to EMG Pickups for helping me make the podcast happen, and to Osiris Media for helping me get the podcast out there. We'll be back in 2 weeks with another episode featuring the incomparable Molly Tuttle. Do me a favor and head over to Apple Podcasts, leave us a review, help me tell the world about everything that's going on here at Inside the Musician's Brain, and I'll catch you back here in 2 weeks for the next episode. Thank you so much for listening.
Introducing the TikTok Viral Lash Serum Grande Lash MD from the leaders in lash and brow care, Grande Cosmetics. Backed by 15 years of real clinical results, where 91% saw longer looking lashes. With over 35,000 five-star reviews, this product started a lash serum revolution. With over 10 million sold and over 100 award wins brand-wide, believe the hype. Start your lash transformation today and get 15% off using code LASHES15.
Hey, music fans. We wanted to let you know about Music on the Mountain, a show that will feature Anders Osborne, Dogs in a Pile, and Saints and Liars. This show will be directly after the Divided Sky Foundation's fun run at 2 p.m. on Saturday, May 18th at the base of Akemo Mountain in Ludlow, Vermont. The show is presented by The Phoenix, a national nonprofit organization offering support to those in recovery and anyone impacted by substance use to celebrate recovery. If you're running in the Divided Sky Foundation's fun run, you'll be automatically registered for the show. It's a family-friendly event, and all proceeds from ticket sales and other donations benefit the Divided Sky Foundation. Visit Music on the Mountain, that's musiconthemtn.com, for more info and to get tickets. That's musiconthemtn.com. Hope you enjoy.